Now, using sticky tape is just one way of getting some graphene, and it's not likely to be much use, as Andrea was saying, for Samsung making television screens. Exactly how graphene is made may well depend on what it is that you intend to use it for. So to explain more, we're joined by Dr. Carl Coleman. He's from the Department of Chemistry at Durham University. Carl, thank you ever so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
How do we make graphene in larger quantities? Sticky tape is all well and good for doing physics on graphene, but how do we make it in bigger quantities in bulk?
Yes, I mean, as you can imagine, using sticky tape is a bit labour-intensive if you wanted a large volume of the material. There are a number of ways to make it, and we sort of categorise those, I guess, as two camps, a top-down approach, which the sticky tape method would be a top-down. So that's starting from graphite, going to the thin layers, and then a bottom-up approach. So top-down, you can actually use a chemical method to really replace the using of the sticky tape. So there are people out there who basically they take graphite and they do a rapid thermal expansion in the presence of an oxidizing acid, such as sulfuric acid. That breaks away, breaks apart those layers, and that also gives you the single sheets. So that's another way of producing it, and of course you can sort of imagine that being a little bit more scalable.
So effectively by superheating a block of graphite, rather than peeling layers off, you're causing the layers to break apart spontaneously.
Exactly. So just give it a big kick in energy, the oxidizing acid, split those layers apart, and you'll get some single sheets. It's a little bit more difficult to separate, of course, because you'll have lots of graphitic impurities in there as well. So there's lots of post-processing that's necessary. So lots of centrifugation, dispersing in solvents. So there are other hurdles to overcome using that method. If you go to more the bottom-up approaches, which you can see or potentially see as more scalable, these we're talking more sort of CVD, that's a chemical vapor deposition approach. And there you can actually decompose pretty much any hydrocarbon-containing gas that you like methane, ethane, propane, etc. People tend to prefer methane, but you can use a mixture of methane and hydrogen and literally flow it over the top of a metal catalyst. And what the researchers in graphene lighted at the moment is use nickel or copper being perhaps the most prominent. And you can grow a graphene film by that decomposition of the methane and hydrogen on top of the copper. And I believe that's what what Samsung are using with the Korean scientists to grow very large, tens of centimetre graphene films. So that's a little bit more scalable and easy to use than sticky tape.
And rather than using something that's becoming relatively rare as it gets used too much, the indium that we're seeing in current screens, using copper, which is quite common and still relatively cheap, and something like methane or any hydrocarbon, of which the prices are slowly going up, but we do still have plenty.
We do still have plenty. I mean, that's another issue about using fossil fuels, I guess. But yes, we do have plenty of natural gas kicking around. So using natural gas, you need hydrogen in there. You need a reducing atmosphere. That's the key. And copper is perhaps the most useful because the solubility of carbon in copper is quite low. This is one of the reasons why you tend to grow only one or perhaps two layers on top of the copper substrate. It's not without its own difficulties, of course, because you'd have to remove the copper. Because the whole idea of replacing indium tin oxide, ITO, of course, is to have a transparent electrode, and copper isn't transparent. So you'd need to remove that copper, and so it's usually an etch to remove the copper, and then you can transfer the film, the graphene film, onto your plastic to assemble your plastic electronics.
So they're still fairly complicated methods that we have to create it. Are we looking at the moment that there is one great way of doing it and several not-so-good ways, or do they each have advantages over the other depending on what product you actually want?
Yeah, it really depends on what you want to do, and that will really dictate what method you want to use. The micromechanical method, i.e. the scotch tape, sticky tape, is very good for physicists. They need a small little chunk of the graphene or a small sheet, and they can study it, measure it, and do lots of different things. The displays obviously is a little bit different, so you are going to need something like a large piece of copper foil to grow your film on, but then you have to transfer it from that copper onto to your plastic and remove the copper. So Yeah, I mean, if you wanted the ITA replacement, that would be the method you would use. But if you were to use it in, say, composite materials, and there's a lot of work going on at the moment about using graphene in composites, so as a nanofiller, then of course neither of those methods would be suitable. And so we need another method to make the graphene. And there are variations on CVD to do that, so where you don't actually use a copper foil, use other metal catalysts, or use a spray pyrolysis type approach to get basically graphene powder that you would then be able to disperse in your polymer matrix to make your composite material. It does really depend on what you want to do with it.
Composites are relatively new. We haven't been using them for that long, but they've made huge waves in the aerospace industry. We've had a question from David Whaley, who got in touch via Twitter. He wants to know if graphene is likely to be used in spacecraft. I'd imagine it's composites that we'd be looking at there.
It definitely would be composites. On its own, it would be difficult to use in the aerospace. So it'd be incorporated into some sort of polymer matrix. So yes, I mean, there's lots of carbon-based nanofillers. So of course, we're all familiar with carbon fiber, which is perhaps the most common one that's out there at the moment. And carbon nanotubes, which have been making some headway, but of course there are some problems associated with that. But really, people have been looking there at these one-dimensional high aspect ratio materials as fillers. And then graphene has sort of come along and sort of challenged, really, I guess, carbon nanotubes in the prospect of being a carbon fiber replacement. So you'd have to get it into some sort of polymer matrix, so a resin or a thermoplastic. And really, the difference, I guess, for the nanofillers is you require much less of the nanofillers compared to, say, carbon fiber. And so that opens up a whole new game for the guys dealing in composites and how they process the materials, how they mold complex shapes, etc. So it opens up new doors, perhaps, that you wouldn't get with carbon fiber. But you'd still get the high strength-to-weight ratio that you would need from a composite material.
Well, thank you very much. We'll have to leave it there. That was Carl Coleman from Durham University. He's with us for the rest of the show. So if you have any questions for him, get them in on Twitter. That's @NakedScientists.